How do you handle triggers in public? When you're in a store or driving or otherwise engaged in daily life and you get a lust hit, what do you do? We're going to talk about lust today and then discuss an approach for handling this common occurrence on this episode of Recovery Support with Kevin Bergen. This is Recovery Support and I'm Kevin Bergen, licensed psychotherapist. This show is to support those in recovery from sexually compulsive behavior and to offer that support with education, inspiration, and motivation. Today's episode has two basic parts. First, we'll do some reading from the S.A. White book about lust in order to identify a problem for many. And then, I'll give you a tool so that you can stay in control instead of your addiction controlling you. First, we're going to read from the S.A. White book on page 203, The Problem. Many of us felt inadequate, unworthy, alone, and afraid. Our insides never matched what we saw on the outsides of others. Early on, we came to feel disconnected from parents, from peers, from ourselves. We tuned in with fantasy and masturbation. We plugged in by drinking in the pictures, the images, and pursuing the objects of our fantasies. We lusted and wanted to be lusted after. We became true addicts. Sex with self, promiscuity, adultery, dependency relationships, and more fantasy. We got it through the eyes. We bought it, we sold it, we traded it, we gave it away. We were addicted to the intrigue, the tease, the forbidden. The only way we knew to be free of it was to do it. "Please connect with me and make me whole," we cried with outstretched arms, lusting after the big fix. We gave away our power to others. This produced guilt, self-hatred, remorse, emptiness, and pain, and we were driven ever inward, away from reality, away from love, lost inside ourselves. Our habit made true intimacy impossible. We could never know real union with another because we were addicted to the unreal. We went for the chemistry, the connection that had the magic, because it bypassed intimacy and true union. Fantasy corrupted the real. Lust killed love. First addicts, then love cripples, we took from others to fill up what was lacking in ourselves, conning ourselves time and again that the next one would save us. We were really losing our lives. Now I'm going to turn to some more reading in the White Book. On page 39, there's a chapter called Lust, the Force Behind the Addiction. And it reads as follows. What's so wrong with sex? We hear this question often, and it was one of our favorite expressions of denial that we had a problem. We could ask similar questions for other addictions, the workaholic, for example. What's so wrong with honest labor? Or with compulsive overeating? What's wrong with it? We have to eat to live. Or with use of alcohol and drugs? What's wrong with a little help to relax and escape? And finally, with the sexaholic. What's so wrong with sex? It's God-given. People ask similar questions about the use of television, movies, music, etc. Usually those of us trying to rationalize our addictions are the ones coming up with these responses. When the questions are asked in a similar manner, it is easy to see how we can be so misled. And sex, perhaps, carries the most confusion. We find it confusing and difficult, if not impossible, to see the physical manifestations of our addiction as cause enough for surrender. Knowing we must stop, we go to great lengths to find reasons for quitting. Quote, "I might get VD, or the wife will leave me." Quote, "I'll have a heart attack if I keep on eating like this." Quote, "I just know this weed'll give me cancer sooner or later." Quote, "I'll wind up with hypertension if I keep on working like this." Quote, "I'll get cirrhosis of the liver and brain damage if I don't stop drinking." End quote. "If I don't unglue myself from this tube, I'm going to turn into a vegetable." Such reasons are seldom enough to make the true addict stop because they deal only with externals. The clue here is that we must differentiate between the physical action and the spiritual action or attitude that takes place at the same time in the same individual. Because he lives inside his attitudes, the individual doesn't see them. He sees only the physical activity and thinks he's feeling guilty for that. It is truly puzzling to him, hence the confusion on the proper motivation for wanting to stop any given addiction. When we look only at the activity itself, most of us find no sufficient motive to stop. But if we can see its spiritual consequences, this can help us despair of it sooner and surrender. Thus, we must look behind the physical to see what's really at work in our sexaholism. But first, let's take a look at lust, for it is this concept that serves as a bridge between the physical and the spiritual aspects of our sexaholism. Continuing reading in the White Book on page 40 at the bottom, the section called Lust. Why in step 1 do we say we are powerless over lust instead of sex? Is not some form of sex what we are addicted to? Yes, we answer, but our problem is not simply sex. Just as in compulsive overeating, the problem is not simply food. Eating and sex are natural functions. The real problem in both of these addictions seems to be what we call lust, an attitude demanding that a natural instinct serve unnatural desires. When we try to use food or sex to reduce isolation, loneliness, insecurity, fear, tension, or to cover our emotions, make us feel alive, help us escape, or satisfy our God hunger, we create an unnatural appetite that misuses and abuses the natural instinct. It is not only more intense than the natural, but becomes something totally different. Eating and sex enter a different dimension. They possess an unnatural spiritual component. The addiction is thus to lust and not merely to the substance or physical act. Lust, the attitude itself, becomes the controlling factor in the addiction. This may be why people exhibit lust in more than one area. Often, those of us addicted to substances or forms of behavior discover we are also addicted to negative attitudes and emotions. One member says, "I remember that when I came off lust, alcohol, and tranquilizers, resentment burst forth like a dammed-up volcano. I remember thinking that controlling lust must be like trying to control a piece of jello. You press in there and it bulges out there, or like trying to rout a gopher. You plug up one tunnel only to have the beast go to work in another." Unquote. People may not be allergic to food and sex in the sense some people are allergic to pollen, strawberries, or cats, but we do become allergic to lust for food and sex. Misusing the natural instinct of sex for an unnatural end over and over again increasingly sensitizes us to the triggers of that association until a simple thought or look elicits the compulsion. For the sexaholic, lust is toxic. This is why in recovery, the real problem is spiritual and not merely physical. This is why change of attitude is so crucial. What is lust? Here's a personal point of view. Quote, "It's pretty tough to get a handle on it, but here's what lust looks like in my life. It's a slave master that wants to control my sex for its own ends in its own way whenever it wants. And it's like mental spiritual noise that distorts and perverts sex much as a raucous radio interference distorts a lovely melody. Lust is not sex, and it is not physical. It seems to be a screen of self-indulgent fantasy separating me from reality, either the reality of my own person in sex with myself or the reality of my spouse. It works the same way whether with a girlfriend, a prostitute, or my wife. It thus negates identity, either mine or the other person's, and is anti-real, working against my own reality, working against me. I can't have true union with my wife while lust is active, because she as a person really doesn't matter. She's even in the way. She's merely the sexual instrument. And I can't have true union within myself while I'm splitting myself having sex with myself. That fantasy partner I've conjured up in my mind is really part of me. With lust, the sex act is not the result of personal union. Sex doesn't flow from that union. Sex energized by lust makes true union impossible. The nature of the lust noise interference I superimpose over sex can be many things. Memories, fantasies ranging from the erotic to revenge or even violence. Or it can be the mental image of a single fetish or of some other person. Seen in this light, lust can exist apart from sex. Indeed, there are those who say they are obsessed with lust who can no longer have sex. I see my lust as a force that apparently infuses and distorts my other instincts as well. Eating, drinking, working, anger, I know I have a lust to resent. It seems as strong as sexual lust ever was. In my experience, lust is not physical. It is not even strong sexual desire. It seems to be a spiritual force that distorts my instincts, and whenever let loose in one area, seems to want to infect other areas as well. And being non-sexual, lust crosses all lines, including gender. When energized by lust, my sexual fantasies or acting out can go in any direction, shaped by whatever I experience. Thus, the more I indulge in sexual lust, the less truly sexual I become. Therefore, my basic problem as a recovering sexaholic is to live free from my lust. When I entertain it in any form, sooner or later, it tries to express itself in every form. And lust becomes the indicator of not only what I do, but what I am. But there is great hope here. By surrendering lust and its acting out each time I'm tempted by it, and then experiencing God's life-giving deliverance from its power, recovery and healing are taking place, and wholeness is being restored. True union within myself first, then with others and the sources of my life. Now that concludes my reading today from the S.A. White book. This idea of lust seems to be more of a problem for some people than others. For some people, lust isn't really what they focus on. However, others, that is their problem, and it's the main source of their struggle. They identify themselves as lustaholics. In the definition for sobriety in Sexaholics Anonymous, they include in their definition progressive victory over lust. Now let's talk about what you can actually do when you're met with these temptations, when you're met with this lust that just hits you full on. Say, for example, you're walking down the street and you see somebody that triggers you. Let's say you're male, you're seeing a female, she's dressed probably provocatively. Doesn't always necessarily need to be that the woman is dressed provocatively. It could be a trigger in any case. So at any rate, you are walking down the street, you might be driving your car, you might be in the grocery store, and you see somebody that is a trigger. One of the problems with lust is that you're objectifying somebody. When you objectify somebody, you make them an object. Instead of a whole person, she's a pair of breasts, or she's a pair of legs, or she's beautiful blonde hair. She's no longer a complete person. So this idea I call personalization is to make her a person again. Make her somebody that you can relate to as a whole person as opposed to an object. Now, how do you do this? First of all, you need to acknowledge what you're doing. acknowledge that you've been objectifying her. So how do you do this? You say, okay, I've been objectifying her and only looking at certain aspects of her. If it's a body part, if it's her sex appeal. And so that's acknowledging. I've been doing this. The next thing you do is personalize. The way you personalize is you begin to ask yourself questions about her. I wonder what her family situation is. I wonder if she has a father that cares about her. I wonder what her education level is. I wonder if she believes in God. I wonder if she's in any physical pain right now. I wonder if she's worried about her finances. Do you see what I'm doing? I'm asking all kinds of questions that have to do with all of us as people, not just things related to sex or physical attraction. Other things that you could ask. How is she going to pay her rent this month? Does she live alone? Does she have roommates? Is she interested in finishing a graduate degree? The questions you can ask go on and on, and that's the idea. They need to go on and on until you have personalized her and seen her as a whole person. Think of the things that you struggle with. Are you worried about your relationship with your mother? Are you concerned about the economy right now? Do you have a church that you feel comfortable in attending? These are all things that you could ask about this woman who has triggered you, making her into a whole person. Maybe she has some health problem that she has scheduled surgery for. Maybe she's got a child with special needs, say Down syndrome or autism. Maybe she has no relationship with her whole family and she's completely alone. Maybe she has some mental problems. All of these questions you can ask make her a whole person as opposed to somebody who solely has some kind of a sex appeal. So when you try this, see how it works for you. Experiment with it. Whenever you get triggered, when you see somebody that is arousing to you, personalize that person. Ask yourself these questions. See what happens for you. In closing today, let's read the solution from the Essay White Book, page 204. We saw that our problem was threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Healing had to come about in all three. The crucial change in attitude began when we admitted we were powerless, that our habit had us whipped. We came to meetings and withdrew from our habit. For some, this meant no sex with themselves or others, including not getting into relationships. For others, it also meant drying out and not having sex with the spouse for a time to recover from lust. We discovered that we could stop, that not feeding the hunger didn't kill us, that sex was indeed optional. There was hope for freedom, and we began to feel alive. Encouraged to continue, we turned more and more away from our isolating obsession with sex and self and turned to God and others. All this was scary. We couldn't see the path ahead, except that others had gone that way before. Each new step of surrender felt it would be off the edge into oblivion, but we took it. And instead of killing us, surrender was killing the obsession. We had stepped into the light, into a whole new way of life. The fellowship gave us monitoring and support to keep us from being overwhelmed, a safe haven where we could finally face ourselves. Instead of covering our feelings with compulsive sex, we began exposing the roots of our spiritual emptiness and hunger, and the healing began. As we faced our defects, we became willing to change. Surrendering them broke the power they had over us. We began to be more comfortable with ourselves and others for the first time without our drug. Forgiving all who had injured us, and without injuring others, we tried to right our own wrongs. At each amends, more of the dreadful load of guilt dropped from our shoulders until we could lift our heads, look the world in the eye, and stand free. We began practicing a positive sobriety, taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. We were learning to give, and the measure we gave was the measure we got back. We were finding what none of the substitutes had ever supplied. We were making the real connection. We were home. And the third step prayer can be found by Googling third step prayer, or it's on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, or page 95 of the Sexaholics Anonymous White Book. Join with me if you know the prayer. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Thank you very much. You can email me with questions, with feedback, with any kind of commentary at kbrecoverysupport@gmail.com. This podcast does not promote any program or fellowship, and it only informs about resources that I have found helpful to my clients. You can refer to the show notes at recoverysupport.podbean.com. I hope you have a fantastic week and have a sober day.